Welcome back to Contract Revolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. A few months back, our friend Matt Reisinger joined us for an epic web class on building and implementing standard operating procedures, or SOPs for short. So if every business process is stored in that head of yours and nowhere else, if you're tired of repeating yourself over and over and over and over, or if you've just plateaued and you're unable to scale because nothing is standardized or repeatable, this episode is for you. Without further ado, let's dive in with Matt Reisinger. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less.
Welcome to the web class. My name is Benji. I am joined by our dear friend, Matt Reisinger. Matt, how are you, dude?
Good, Benji. Excited, dude. I'm seeing the names over there, and I feel like it's the who's who of awesome builders. We got a ton of people, and my buddy Richie Brown, who's a builder down here in the south of me, I saw several other names of folks that I know, so it's cool. I feel like you got a star-studded cast. It's weird that I can't see them, but I think they're listening to us, Benji.
They can hear us. So it's always fun to see familiar faces. There's like 400 people here now and climbing. Guys, we've got a jam-packed hour for you. Before I dive into the content, like a couple of very simple housekeeping things. We use this platform that is called LiveStorm for these web classes. This looks familiar to you. There's like a chat box. There's a video feed. There's a deck, etc. I see all of you have done this already, but if you haven't yet, find the chat box. Let us know where you're from. Let us know what kind of business you run. I want to make sure you can hear me, see me, and you know how the chat box works, because we're going to be doing some call and response. I'm going to be asking you guys some questions that I want some feedback on. So I want to make sure that you're all familiar with this little setup. Hey, Tom. Hey, Martin. Hey, Kelsey. Hey, Tyler. A lot of people here. Awesome. Let me set this up, guys. Today's session brought to you by Breakthrough Academy and The Build Show. So we're partners together, big fans of each other. Really quickly, some context here on like what we do at Breakthrough Academy. We systemize contracting businesses for growth. We work with a ton of builders. We help them implement systems. We help them run more efficient businesses, work less, make more, all that good stuff. One little chapter from that book that we're kind of zooming in on, thing that we're pulling off the shelf and really exploring today specifically, is building standard operating procedures, or SOPs for short, which, look, I'm going to be honest, doesn't sound like the sexiest subject matter. So we just did a web class called How to Build SOPs, none of you would have come. So we called it the Hands-Off Contractor, How to Produce More While Doing Less. It is a good title. It's fundamentally what SOPs are about. That's what it's here to help you do. And I actually think when we get into like the nitty gritty of this, you're going to find this a lot more interesting, a lot more fun than it sounds. So thank you guys for being here. We're going to dive right in. I got a few slides here to just set this up, and then I have a question I want to ask you, the audience. So when we do web classes, we always give tons of free stuff away. Think of it like going to a birthday party when you were a kid and it's at the bowling alley, and then at the end you get this little goodie bag with like a comic book and candies. This is like a goodie bag for grownups. We're going to send you home with templates, guides, how-to videos, all the stuff we're talking about today. We have resources and systems that are going to make the implementation of it much easier. So I always think it's very easy to make stuff sound simple, and it's also obvious. As you know, actually implementing something into your business in a way that is functional and that it works and that it lasts, it's a lot harder. So we want to make that as easy as possible by giving you some free stuff that is totally aligned with everything we're talking about today. So at the end, there's a landing page we're going to go to in about 55 minutes where you can download this stuff for free. The purpose and outcomes for today's session is very simple. We want to teach you how to identify, build, and implement the standard operating procedures your business needs. I want you to have the confidence to begin creating SOPs, and I want you to lead with the templates and resources needed to get started. So that's my promise to you over the next hour. The agenda is very simple. Four things we're going to do. SOP red flags. In other words, what are the symptoms that you're going to be experiencing that would let you know that you have an SOP problem? If you have you feel nauseous and you have this, and you're kind of sweaty, you probably have the flu. If you have a sore throat and a cough, you have a cold. If you have these things, you have an SOP issue. So we're going to talk about those in a second. That's where we'll start. The second section of this, we're going to talk about just how to identify where to begin your SOP building journey. Sometimes it's a little overwhelming. If you have a fire here, a fire there, where do I even start? So we'll talk about how to prioritize. And then we're going to go through a very simple framework for how to build these. It's not hard. There's 5 steps. You're going to find this a much simpler thing to tackle than maybe you originally thought. And then lastly, we're going to talk about change management, a little bit of a conversation about how to foster adoption. If you have been in business for any time at all, you probably have experienced this thing where you create something that you think is great, a system, a solution, a dashboard, a checklist, a whatever, and you try to roll it out with your team and they just kind of look at you with blank stares and they're like, huh, who cares? So we want to avoid that. We don't want this work to go to waste. We need to make sure that things get adopted. So that is like the 4-step plan for today. Last thing I want to say is just over the next hour, focus on gold nuggets. I don't expect you to have all this stuff memorized and implemented by tomorrow. So just have a piece of paper out and a pen, jot down the stuff that really makes sense to you. Please use the chat box to ask questions, share your experience. If you got a question for Matt, you got a question for me. If we can hit it like in the moment, we will. I also have someone off screen right now moderating this and they're grabbing questions that we can circle back to at the end and do some Q&A. And lastly, use the templates. Like, we're going to give you some free stuff here that the clients pay for. It's our way of saying thanks for being here. Make sure you use it. It's going to save you time. Okay. I have a question for the 470 of you here. And same thing to you, Matt. What part of your operations frustrates you the most? I want you to think about your business, your clients, your team, what you actually build, the processes you follow, the equipment you use, the market you're in, the weather you have to contend with. Like, just go very broad. What facet of your operations frustrates you the most? And Matt, same question to you. While these folks are typing away an answer to this, when you think of your growth journey with Rising or Build, what facet of running a construction business, a residential, and being a high-end residential builder was always the most frustrating for you?
Yeah, let me answer that a little long-winded, just because I want to say that's changed a lot over the years. So Benji, next year will be my 20th year in business. And you know, when I think about my first 5 years in business in particular, I started my company in 2005. The market in Austin was crazy. Build anything, it'll sell. I did a couple spec houses. If anyone listening knows my story, I basically was a giant failure. Like, I was on the verge of chapter 11, multiple months or years at a time in like 2009 through 12 or so. And some of that was from a spec house that I couldn't sell and ended up selling for a giant loss. Also made, I haven't talked about this a whole lot on camera before, I made a giant mistake with a client that was really an SOP mistake that we fixed. And it was a, I don't know, $200,000 mistake at a time when I didn't have 6 extra dollars to spare. So should I do that story as the 2000? Okay, so here I am. I'd finally just sold my spec house. It's like 2012-ish. I finally sold a spec house. I cemented my $300,000 loss. My credit cards were 100% maxed. I think I had like $50,000 in credit card debt. I still owed him my truck. I hadn't paid that off. I had a rental home that around this time, the people moved out in the middle of the night. Someone smashed the back door to try and steal some boxes. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to pay my $1,200 mortgage payment on this without renters? And at the same time, I had a big custom going, a really nice custom, like one that per day, you've probably still seen photos of this house because it was super spexy. And it was a cost plus job. There was a bank involved. And I was I was putting about 5% into I can't think of the correct term. What do we call it when we have a a budget for things that are unexpected. What's the word I'm looking for?
Like an allowance or a contingency budget or a, you know, there's a bunch of different words for it.
I had a 5% contingency budget and that was baked into the bank budget. And I had about 150,000 of signed change orders. And the customer of mine and I were communicating pretty well during this time. And he was thinking that his change orders were coming out of the contingency budget. And I'm thinking, no, that contingency budget is for us when we make a mistake or prices are wrong or, oh my gosh, copper went up or whatever. Long story short, I did not have very good standard operating procedures. We get to the end of the job and we're like $150,000, $200,000 over budget, but I've got 150 in signed change orders. So I was within 5% on the job-ish. It was, as you can imagine, an expensive job. Well, long story short, the bank funds the total amount of the contract price. And I've got one last draw request for about 200K. And the client's like, well, what do you mean you have a draw request? Like, you finished the job and I moved in. And I said, no, I've told you there's another draw request. We've got all these bills coming in. This is still in budget. You know, I've got these signed change orders. And long story short, I didn't get paid on it. My lawyer said, look, it's not even worth suing him at this time. He's a lawyer. He's got all the money in the world to fight this. You know, you're going to spend $75,000, $80,000 with me to get maybe $75,000 of this $200,000 he owes you. And it was basically, it all fell down to a standard operating procedure issue in my very young business. You know, I'm in business like 7 years at this point. And, you know, here I have all this credit card debt. I just sold my spec and cemented a $300,000 loss that I had to pay back.
Yeah.
It was brutal.
And killing it.
It was awful. And, you know, in our business and for the other contractors out there, you know that we live on the margins, right? If you're, no matter what your percent is, whether you make, you know, whether you charge 20% of your job or 25% or 30% or 40%, by the time it's all said and done, you as the owner of the company, you're making a couple percent on the bottom line. And so there was no bottom line for me for not only that year, but for several years. I remember basically making negative income for a couple of years. And that was that point in my career, that 2012 point, was such a critical mistake on my part that made me realize, oh my gosh, I've got to get standard operating procedures in place. Meanwhile, I've got, I don't know, three or four project managers. I had three or four decent sized jobs going that were, you know, that had me pulling my hair out because we didn't have very good standard operating procedures. And here I am trying to make sure that I'm managing multiple projects from a high level well, and it wasn't happening. So that's the nightmare story for me to say, you know, that was the turning point for me in a critical way. And the end of this, just a quick ending to the story, through a lot of prayer and a lot of hard work, I paid off that debt within 4 years. And 2015, 2016, I can't remember the exact date. It was like December 2015, I paid it all off. And I've really changed my personal standard operating procedures as well as my company standard. Like, for instance, since that time, my personal and my company has never bought anything on credit to that. Since then, besides my house, I still have a mortgage on my house, but every truck I own, we own, we didn't get loans for anything, both in the company and personally. And I drove a very old truck and had old clothes and had old everything for a few years because I needed to pay off all that debt and get back to this point of feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm not a slave to all these additional masters. So standard operating procedures, what we're talking about today, I know that my friends on the call, we got 500 of us here listening in. I suspect that 90% of you can relate to that story, relate to the indebtedness at some point in your life and that feeling of, gosh, I am an absolute slave, even though I own my own business.
I love the story and it really paints a picture for what's at stake here. I mean, that's a very extreme example. But I guarantee you 500 people here, at least a handful of our attendees will have been through a situation like that or even worse. And as I'm reading off what our folks today are posting when I ask that question, you know, it's a lot of the same stuff. Change orders, punch lists, billing, communication, financials, AP and AR, change of scope, dealing with ignorant clients and subs, bidding accurately. It's all the same stuff. So we're all like, we're all kind of up against the same challenges here. And I want to do a little bit of like comparing of notes. You guys have some stuff that's on your mind that's bugging you. Here's some things that we see in the Breakthrough Academy universe. When we look at businesses, and we work with about just over 600 right now in our program, when we see the following four issues, it's a very clear sign to us that they have an issue with SOPs, okay? So the first is just repeating yourself constantly, right? You can see this little like meme that we made on the right with, this is actually one of our clients. That's Ruben, I think. Yeah, that's Ruben Beck. Anyway, you can like, how many of you have been in this situation where it's just like your phone literally never leaves your ear? You're just walking around the office, the truck on speaker all day, answering questions, dealing with stuff that at the end of the day is pretty repetitive. When you have a lack of documented procedures, that directly equals more phone calls. If someone does not have a checklist or a small little process to refer to either digitally or printed out at the job site, wherever they're working, they're going to call you, right? And very, very quickly, that reinforces, they get their question answered. And it doesn't take long for you to become the go-to person whenever anything goes wrong or whenever any question needs to be answered. And so if things in your business just feel kind of sloppy, they feel looser than you want them to, you have a standard, you have a certain, standard of excellence, a certain quality expectation. You sometimes worry like, man, these people shouldn't be asking me this question so much, these questions so much. That is a surefire symptom. Here's another one. Really slow onboarding and or high turnover. So if it takes the new guy forever to learn how things get done on site, learn your processes, learn your standards, learn your values and culture, what that means is there's nothing there for them to refer to learn faster. You're doing what a lot of people call tribal knowledge, meaning it's handed down from one generation to the next, or the senior employee to the new employee. It's all verbal. And the story kind of changes every time. So there's actually nothing set in stone. There's nothing standardized. And that can create a real lack of confidence in new staff, right? They don't actually understand the standard. And when people feel not super confident, they tend to leave. So two things. Take server for people to learn, and you have a revolving door, poor retention of people. That is an SOP issue fundamentally. A third would be quality issues. Now, I suspect that, if you're on this webinar and you consume Breakthrough Academy content or you consume Build Show content, it's very, very safe to assume that you are a higher end builder. You're into performance buildings, you're into the latest and greatest, you follow the best practices. I don't think that any of you're like doing, you know, shoddy stuff out there, but to your, from your lens, to your standard, if it feels like there's more callbacks than you want, you're not getting the feedback from customers that you want, or you're just dealing with minutia constantly around quality of the job, that is an SOP issue as well. And the fourth thing that I would say is just an inability to scale. You feel stuck. You feel like you always have to be there. Because you always have to be there, there's only so much that you can produce because there's only one of you. And there's a really real sensation of like, man, I'm sitting on this huge opportunity. This business could be 50% bigger. This business could be three times bigger. The demand is there, but I can't get there because there's only one of me. And I feel incredibly plateaued as a result. So those are four big symptoms that we see. Matt, I'm curious, like, you want to layer on to any one of those four? Repeating yourself, like high turnover, quality issues, or this feeling stuck thing. Oh, Matt, you're muted. Yeah, sorry. My bad. I thought I had my volume down. Anyway.
Sorry about that. What I was saying was, you know, I think the other thing I would layer on that is feeling there's not enough time in the day to get everything done. You kind of said it there where you said you need to be quote, be there all the time. When we were talking about my SOP issue with change orders, there's been a bunch of chat and I've tried to reply to those, but the bottom line was we didn't collect cash at the time of the change order. And a big SOP issue for us was that everything was kind of going through me and there wasn't a standard operating procedure at the time. It was like, I was the executive PM, I was the executive builder. So everything had to go through me and I didn't have enough time to get everything done. And at that time, I didn't have a standard procedure to say, hey, when you make a change order, you got to pay us in cash for that, especially when there's a bank involved. So we made several changes, but the point is, if you have these standard procedures, and I'm cutting to the chase here a little bit at the end, it allows you to, for me, be at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in my office, talking to you guys and not managing jobs. You know, my company will do about 12 million this year and in construction, and I'm only on job sites, you know, probably 2 days a week. And that's usually something for build show related, not me meeting customers, not me looking at draw requests, because we have great procedures now. And I wish I could take credit for all that. I have one or two people in my team that have been really good at implementing those. But a quick BTA plug, a lot of my friends, a lot of build show members are BTA members. If you're not a BTA member, I'm assuming a lot of you on the call today are not. One thing that this webinar that's free will help you quite a bit, yes. But one thing is, if you commit to running your business like a business and not as a job that you own, that's when all this is going to come in. And that's really what I did starting in around 2015, 2017, where I said, look, I need to run this business like, in some respects, a McDonald's franchise.
Yes.
Where there's a system for everything. And then I get to be Ronald McDonald. I know I get to do what I'm good at and what I like, but I don't have to do things that I'm not good at and I don't like, because now there's a procedure in place for those. And I wish I could tell you I implemented all those. I haven't. I've been a part of a lot of those. I'm certainly not the expert in scopes of work. I nerd out on the building science of things. I spent time in getting jobs, acquiring jobs. But I don't have any, I basically have zero day-to-day duties in my construction company at this point, in my business.
Now you just get to Ronald McDonald around very cool job sites, make awesome videos. And a lot of that is because of the stuff that we're going to talk about here today.
Exactly. That's what we're trying to get through. Sorry for the tangent there. But.
Oh, it's great, man. I love tangents. I'm a tangent fiend. Tangent away. I'll keep my eye on the clock and we're on time. So I want to do a really quick actually shout out. So Jason Hoke, he's a landscaper, not a builder. But if you want to learn, I will actually, Aaron, if we can post his video in the chat here. He won Implementer of the Year. We do these really cool awards at Breakthrough Academy every year. He won Implementer of the Year a few years ago. And for you can see this quote here. It's worth mentioning. At first, I was doing everything. As we implemented more systems and SOPs, it opened up more of my bandwidth. He's gone from, you know, a small, barely profitable 65 hours a week to a very, very systemized, very interesting business in Denver. Only takes him about 35 hours a week to run it. So he's a big SOP guy too. I want to do a little, guys, we're going to do a little like self-report card, okay? So here's how this works. You're going to give yourself a score out of 10. A 10 is like, man, this business is dialed. Everything is documented. Everything's visible. Everything is followed. We updated every year. We are like, we run like the military. Things are extremely, extremely organized. A 1 is, listen, everyone does everything their own way. I field calls all the time. It's pretty stressful. Nothing's repeatable. That's the 1. And when we do these webinars, there's always someone who kind of claims that they're like a -3. So if that's you, it's a safe space. Nobody's going to tell on you. But then there's also this mid-range, right? There's like, we have some processes. Some of it's documented. We've got some stuff, but if we're honest, it's not followed that well. And I know that there's work to be done. So I want to do a little take a pulse check on the room here and see where people are at. We got some ones. We got a lot of fives. We got a few more ones, a seven, a six. I haven't seen a 10 yet. We got a four. We got a first negative. Okay, everyone is in the right place. I'm glad. This is a good group. Every once in a while, I do a web class and everyone is a 10. And I'm like, well, why did you come to the web class? Okay, you're in the right spot. So safe space. Thank you for sharing. I really appreciate the honesty. I want to talk a little bit about the secrets of building SOPs. And let me first define this. So as you guys know, SOP stands for standard operating procedure. Another way to think about this is an agreed upon way to carry out a task, right? So the team has agreed this is indeed the best way to pour a foundation. This is indeed the best way to pull a financial report from our CRM. This is the best way to do a quality inspection at the end of a job, what have you, okay? And so when we're thinking about how to do this, a lot of people get stuck on this very simple first question, which is, where do I start? I've got a lot of different things that I can do. So I'm going to introduce a few ideas that are going to make this a little bit easier. One is this idea of pushing versus pulling. So when we make SOPs, we want to pull them out of our team and not push them onto our team. I want to explain the difference. Pushing SOPs is a very top-down approach. We need to do SOPs because this guy, Benji and Matt, in a web class I went to said we have to. So you guys have to make this, right? The owner is motivated, but the team doesn't really get it. And then that lack of buy-in to the SOP building process makes it very slow. It also makes it very poor quality because, as I'm going to get to in a minute, you're actually not the best person to write all of the standard operating procedures because you actually don't know how to do everything in your business, believe it or not. Some of the people on your team are absolutely needed. So you have they take forever and they're not that good. And to use a military term, I don't know if a lot of you have probably read Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink, is this idea of decentralized command where everyone in the business or everyone in the organization, the platoon, is kind of empowered to make decisions that drive things forward. So pushing would be the opposite. It is like centralized command. Everything goes through you. Not good. Okay, so pulling, on the other hand, is bottom up, right? And the SOPs get built because the team understands the benefit because you've explained it to them. It's not, hey guys, we need SOPs because I said so. It's like, hey guys, I think that if we built this process, it's going to make your work life this much easier. It's going to get you off a site earlier. It's going to allow you to be more productive, less stressed out. Let's make these together, right? So the owner's motivated, but the team is also motivated. You've got the correct tools to do it. The quality of the SOP is very, very high, and you build them much faster because you're doing it as a group. So I want you to understand the difference. And before we get into which ones to start with, just always remember that idea. Am I pushing this or am I pulling this? Now, when it comes to beginning the SOP building journey, there's one obvious place to start, which is safety. So let me say this. If your current business has processes, has aspects that where people's health, safety, or lives are at risk because of a lack of process, that is the very, very obvious place to start. You don't systemize anything else until that is done. So you first think of safety. And my team, my customers, my subs, any other stakeholders involved with the project, is safety being compromised because of a lack of SOPs? You start with those ones. Okay. Once those ones are out of the way, this gets to become a bit of a choose your own adventure type journey. And so I want to give you four questions to ask yourself and reflect on. And I would take a screen grab of this slide and maybe do some journaling this weekend to think about this. Question one, what keeps you up at night? What are you kind of rolling around your bed and kind of thinking and stressing about? That's the first question. What stresses your team out? Do you notice your crews kind of griping and grumbling about the same things? It's some stage of the project or some part of the job that they really don't like or feels really cumbersome or disorganized. What stresses your team out? What's costing you money? if you're doing job costing, which you should be, and if you're not, come to one of our other web classes on job costing. But if you're doing job costing and you're sort of retroactively looking at what you estimated versus what actually happened, and you're noticing, boy, man, there's some real discrepancies here. We're like completely blowing our budget on materials, or maybe like we're getting really snared up on this one stage of a project all the time. You will see patterns if you're paying attention to this. What costs you money is a great question to reflect on. And then fourth, just what annoys your customers, right? What are you finding where are communication breakdowns happening? What do you think is leading to maybe some frustration towards the end of a job for a client and for you as well? So I'm telling you, if you ask those four questions, it's going to leap off the page. It's going to be very, very obvious where to begin. And so outside of the safety thing, our advice is like, guys, don't overthink this. Just pick one and start. It's more important that you begin this journey than you sort of like absolutely analyze and pick the perfect first one. I'm really a proponent of getting started, because look, over the next 6 months to 2 years to however long this takes you, you're going to get them all done. And I think it's more important to get a quick start than it is to kind of do this analysis paralysis thing forever. Matt, any comments on this idea of where to begin?
I think this kind of, your kind of idea of take a minute and journal on this is a good one. If this is something that's repeatedly on your prayer list, for me, it was this client that I was praying like, oh my gosh, Lord, I'm having a hard time with this. How am I going to do this? That was that turning point of like, I've got to put some procedures in place. I can't run everything through me. We've got to figure out how to do this in a systemized fashion. As a side note, I read right around that time this book by Michael Gerber called The E-Myth, which is like what BTA is preaching day in and day out. If you haven't read the book, the whole book is basically like, if you're going to make a McDonald's hamburger, you need a manual to do it, is kind of the one sentence version of the book. Your system, your business should be systematized. And it's taken me a lot of years to get there, right? I've been in business now 2 decades. So this isn't an overnight process. I didn't answer on that 1 to 10 that you put in. I probably would say that I'm a 7 or maybe an 8. There's still plenty of things that we do by sheer manpower, brain power, whatever. And if we lose somebody, we lose that brain power or manpower. We're not at the perfection level either, right? Just because I've been in business for 2 decades. But during that time, I was really realizing, gosh, I've got to get standard procedures in place that don't revolve around Matt does this or that, or Matt everything, or Matt's got to be on every job every day. Meanwhile, I was doing some things on the side that were also really helpful that I didn't realize were standard procedures. One of my standard procedures that's not even really related to what we're talking about today is I use the same subs on every job, and I have for almost 15 years, probably, I would say. One of them just called me on the phone. That's who that came from. But for the most part, my subs, because they've been with my team for so long, we don't bid to multiple players. They know our standard operating procedures. He may be calling me on the job site about something random or out of the ordinary, but he always knows, here's how we do things. You know, we do this type of duct work. We use this type of system. We use these standard operating procedures when he's on the job. And that's true of the accounting department as well as the guys who are installing the windows on my job site. But we really need these standard operating procedures in all areas of our business.
I think a really healthy mental framing for this is, and we hear this a lot with, particularly with builders versus other businesses. When it comes to SOPs, the pushback or the limiting belief around them is, no, Benji, you don't understand. Like every scope is different. Every customer is different. Every blueprint and drawing is different. Like there's nothing that is standardized. There's nothing that we can do. And so I hear that and I empathize with that. I mean, that's what makes building, frankly, one of the hardest businesses in the world. surprise. but what I encourage people to really be sort of intellectually honest with themselves about is, okay, that might be true, but what is the same every time? What is the same? Okay, well, the way that we mobilize from site is pretty much the same every time. The way that we do safety inspections is pretty much the same every time. The way that we do X, Y, Z, there are, if you really look at it through that lens, you're going to find a whole bunch of things that are not custom, that are not one-off, that are actually repeatable. And so I encourage people to start there. Speaking of books, there's another really great one by this guy named Paul Akers. It's called True Second Lean. Have you read it, Matt?
Yeah, I think it's on my shelf right here.
So we've had him. He's great. We've had him on the podcast, and he's, you know, his mantra, which is a simple one, fix what bugs you, right? There are going to be things in your business that drive you nuts. Fix them. And it's all about continuous improvement. That is a really fun, and it's a quick read. You can audiobook it in about 4 hours. So I highly recommend it. Okay, those are our thoughts on where to begin. I want to talk about the SOP building process. I'm going to make a quick mention. There is a really easy to use sort of fill in the blanks checklist available. There's a couple example files. I'll kind of show, I'm going to leave PowerPoint here and show you. There is a guide. So if you can see this, you can see this on the left. If you forget everything we say today, there's like a step-by-step walkthrough guide on how to build these. And then there's a fill in the blanks template. This looks weird because I think my computer's on dark mode, but the training checklist is on the right, and it's paint by numbers. You can just come in here and make edits. It's 80% done. You fill in the last 90%. I'm a big fan, guys, of plagiarizing other people's work. You're not in high school. No one cares. Just take our stuff and cheat. Get it done faster. So that will be available at the end. You can grab that stuff and a bunch more. But I want to introduce to you an idea from this book called Great Processes, which we've got an ebook available in the downloads as well. But I got to give credit to our friend Tom Hughes, who I think, Aaron, maybe we can post some of the episodes we've done with him in the chat. But this guy is sort of like the SOP goat, in my opinion. He is really, really switched on. He's a sort of a lean manufacturing guy. He writes about it, talks about it, speaks about it. And he's written a lot about creating SOPs. And he's come up with this really just a simple and easy and memorable framework that we like to teach. And I think it makes the whole SOP building exercise a lot more approachable. So I'm going to rattle off this GREAT thing quickly here, and that'll have you layer on wherever you feel like it. So guys, G stands for Gemba, and Gemba is a Japanese term for actual place. And what I mean by this is when you begin creating SOPs, what a smart person would do is they would go to the job site. Or they would go to, if it's a sales process, maybe they follow around the salesperson and they actually go to customers' homes, or they go to the shop, or they do it in the truck, or whatever the process is you're trying to capture, you go there. And the problem we want to avoid is this one where you kind of, I've done this a million times. You kind of, you know, I'm going to write an SOP for this. You sit on your computer and you have to go to memory, and you kind of have to think in the abstract. And you're, a lot of the times, especially if you're an owner, you're trying to remember tasks and processes that, you know, if you've been off the tools for a little while, you might have forgotten. You might be rusty, right? You might not actually know. And so you're dealing in the abstract. What happens is you miss details, and you're really writing something that ends up looking kind of filler. If you're literally walking around with your foreman on site, watching them do something, and you're documenting with a notepad, maybe you're even using some dictation tool where you're just talking into your phone and it's auto-typing for you, I'm telling you, the level of, it's a much more high-definition picture that you get of the process. So don't sit in a coffee shop and try and do this. Don't, you know, sit in your office or a conference room and try and do this. Go to the Gemba, go to the actual place where the work happens. That's what G stands for. R, it stands for recognize. Okay. the SOP needs to be recognized as the true best practice by the team members who execute. And you can see this funny meme of Michael Scott on the side. And the caption says, when someone with no idea how to do your job tries to tell you how to do your job, we all know what that feels like. And put yourself in the shoes of your crew, okay? If you, the owner with the fancy truck who isn't on site as much as he used to, you roll up one day with this huge manual that you want them to now follow, right? Do they care? Not really, is the short answer. And so that part of the other reason, by the way, what we talk about doing it at the Gemba is to get them involved, is to have them have input on the SOP, because people generally follow systems that they helped build and they reject ones that they didn't. So it needs to be recognized by the team as the best practice, because if it doesn't, what will happen is when the new guy starts a few months from now and they're saying, hey, like, where's my training manual? The foreman goes, well, it's in the truck, but you know what? Honestly, we don't really follow it because that's not the right process anyway. And the whole exercise gets undermined. So R stands for recognize, super important point. E is a basic one. They need to be easy to use and they need to be easy to follow, okay? I am not a big fan of massive, long manuals that take forever to read. It's like you pull this thing out and it looks like a Lord of the Rings book. It's just way too long. It's way too complicated. Never create a multi-page manual when a one-page checklist will do. That's a really great mantra. Most of the stuff we do in these businesses is pretty simple. It's a 3-step process. It's a 10-step process. Maybe there's a few kind of like logic jumps. If this happens, then do that. If that happens, then do this other thing, right? It's not super, super complex. And so you want to keep this as simple as possible. And another pro tip on this would be to be very multimedia. Use photo and video where you can. Lay out the steps in sequential order. Keep instructions very simple and short. There's some great tools out there. Company Cam is one of them. Gemba Docs is another one. But there are tons, and I would really encourage people to embrace technology and find an SOP building tool that helps them. A is available at the point of use. There's this great line. Paul Akers says this all the time. Tom Hughes says this all the time. It comes from the lean world. Put the answer where the question is, right? So we want to have our SOPs where the work happens. We don't want them sitting on a shelf in the office. We don't want them tucked under the passenger seat in the work van. We want to make them available where the work happens. So I'll just actually give a really quick shout out for Gemba Docs, which maybe we can link in the chat box. This is a really cool tool that allows you to make SOPs very quickly. Basically, it's like pictures and prompts, and you can bang out an SOP in 5 minutes. But then the flip side of it is it's also like this really cool QR code system. So you can print out QR codes, tape them wherever, you know, in your shop, on certain tools, in the vehicle, and you just take out your phone, you scan it, and it opens up the app to the exact SOP that you need for that specific thing. So I'll give you a kind of a goofy example. We work with a lot of property maintenance companies, and they have a lot of, you know, first-time Canadians, immigrant workers who work for their business. And they, for the longest time, they couldn't figure out how to pump gas. So they printed a QR code and they taped it right beside the actual gas tank on all of their work vans. And now they scan it. They know what to do. They know what to do with the receipt. And that whole thing, which was a huge headache for this business, is now solved. So anyway, I'm going on a tangent here, but they need to be available at the point of use. We don't want these things collecting dust. And then lastly, is trained and tested. Okay, SOPs are used as the criteria that employees are trained against. So we have something standardized and written and documented for new people to follow. But, you know, I think it's actually quite overwhelming for a new employee to not have, they're just doing, like I said earlier, like this tribal knowledge thing where it's just one person's advice and this other person's idea, and they can't actually hold something or read something or look at something. It's really overwhelming. And then when we say tested, what that has to do with is your SOPs need to be tested for relevance and currency all the time. Your business is going to be adopting new technology, new equipment. There's changes to the building code. There's new best practices. There are new materials coming out all the time. All of this stuff changes. Your business does too. So we want to make sure that on an annual basis, at minimum, we're testing, saying, hey, is this SOP indeed the best practice? Are we following the most current process, et cetera? So G stands for Gemba, R stands for recognized, E is easy to use and follow, A is available at the point of use, and T is tested and trained. Matt, I was on a bit of a rant there. Anything that you want to add to one or a few of those points?
You know, it's funny. I've been thinking about, I'm building a house where I'm kind of the project manager on a particular build right now, and I'm not used to project managing. I get to do what I generally want on the company, and on this one, I want to project manage it because I'm filming the whole build start to finish. We call it the Reisinger build. I'm publishing an episode in 3 hours to YouTube and thebuildshare.com. And, you know, the Paul Akers, if you read that book that you recommended, or you go watch any of his videos about lean, I mean, he's incredible. And FastCap is his company.
Yes.
And FastCap, like, if I've never been there, but I watch his videos, when you see their workstations, you know, they've got like a cutout for each individual knife that the guy who's at that station needs to use, and it's labeled perfectly. And funny enough, I was thinking today, like on this job site, our company hasn't done a good job of having some standard operating procedures on every job to show, like, this trash can is lunch trash only, and it's got one of those lids that keeps the raccoons out. And another thing that we keep shop vacs and brooms in the job, but we don't do a Paul Akers job where, like, we put a sign up with a black logo that's the size of the broom that says, here's where the broom lives. And those are some of the things that I want to do on this job that I'm doing, but also make sure they're on all of our jobs, so that any Reisinger build job you go to has a broom and dustpan station, has the same exact lunch trash signage. I know this is a little bit minutia, but that's some of the things I've been thinking about recently. Like, you know, the more organized you can be on the job and everybody knows, hey, there's a broom as soon as you walk into the house on the right-hand wall, whatever wall that is, and you put up this little piece of plywood that has the outline logo of the broom and the dustpan, then it helps keep your jobs clean. And we're really huge on keeping clean job sites. We feel like it's the best marketing you can do. And by the way, your clients pay for it as well, because they get their job when it's a clean job. So it's all those little minutia from, you know, we've tackled the change orders. We've tackled some of the big low hanging fruit, or the things that were bonking us in the head, maybe better analogy than the low hanging fruit. So now I'm thinking about all those other scopes as well, and standard operating procedures.
I think another thing I would add to this is there's something, I'm reminded of this because you talk about the FastCap example, and Paul Akers is a great YouTube channel too, by the way. He's a good subscribe. When you are in an environment where things are organized, clean, there's steps for everything. I mean, you know, here's a good example. Maybe if you're a Subway fan, maybe you don't like Subway, you like McDonald's, whatever. Think of your favorite fast food place. If you were to get on the other side of the counter and look at what the actual employee is looking at when they make your sandwich, there's diagrams and steps and pictures for absolutely every single thing that they have to do. And businesses that have that, I want to say this, like, sorry, let me frame it differently. If you don't have that, okay, new person arrives to the site, how do I do this? Well, you do X, Y, Z, or everything is just very loose. Everything is very informal. You are saying something without saying something. There is a cultural element that is really hard to, it's kind of an intangible, but when people get to a new job site, or they get into the vehicle with their new project manager for the first time, or they arrive at your office for orientation and they sense that things are together, everything hangs together nicely, there's a place for everything, there is an implicit, there's like a subliminal message that you're sending to this person, this new person, that this is how things operate here. And it's very, very difficult unless you've experienced it. But when you have that, there's a cultural value around organization and standardization and following the process. It is militaristic, and I mean that in a good way. And so, yes, it's about, you know, capturing information and documentation and all this stuff, but it's also about kind of the vibe that you're putting around the building. And if you've experienced, if anyone is, knows what I'm talking about in the chat box, held me out. It's kind of a nuanced point, but there's an energy thing that you're putting out there too. And I think new people really glom onto that for the better, or if you don't have it, for the worse. So, okay, that's our section on how to build SOPs. And there's a few ideas here I want to share as we get close to the end. One of them is on change management.
Change management is,
it's a little bit of like a corporate term, but what it means, change management is how to implement systems and new processes and new stuff into your business in a way that gets followed. I talked about this earlier, the frustrating moment when you create something great and no one cares. So change management is a whole school of thought and a whole philosophy and business practice around fixing that. We had this really great guest on the podcast maybe a year and a half ago named Jeff Skipper. He's written this book called Dancing with Disruption. He's like a very, very high-end change management consultant. He works with huge businesses on massive implementations. And he had this great quote. He says, look, the easiest thing for your team to do when confronted with change is nothing, right? Is nothing. That's what happens most of the time. So I want to get out in front of this and say, if you're going to start this SOP building journey, you need to sell the vision, pull it from your team, all of that stuff, but you also need to be prepared for some resistance. You are going to hear someone say, why do we need to do this, right? This seems kind of complicated. What's wrong with what we're doing right now? And it is this last step that I think is so critical to prepare for and be ready to contend with. So there's a few kind of practical points I would talk about. Somebody in the chat box actually mentioned Cameron Harold earlier, mentioned Vivid Vision, that book, which I highly recommend. When we're creating SOPs, one of the first things we need to do is sell the vision for why this matters. And it's not why this matters to me, the business owner. It's why this matters to you, the employee. By doing this, and you want to be specific, by implementing this new SOP around change orders that communicates with the customers earlier and ensures sign-offs, a couple things are going to happen. We're not going to have those. You're not going to have those really difficult conversations with clients later on. It's going to lower stress levels. It's going to make the entire operation run more smoothly. And this has a direct impact on you, the employee on the job site. So a lot of the times we have a hard time taking ourselves out of our own shoes as owners. You want SOPs because it makes your business more profitable. It's more organized. It makes you feel better. Look, the employee doesn't care about that. They care about their own problems and their own jobs. So you need to frame it that way. Really, really sell the vision early on. Another good way to do this or avoid maybe some of the pushback is setting mile markers. So when you build a house, there are big milestones along the way, right? We know what they are. And when you're implementing a system, you want to think through what are some of the mile markers for us? Are there little mini celebrations, little steps that we can get to that are going to show progress, that are going to help us build momentum and make this really thorny, big, new, challenging thing a lot less daunting? We want to break it down into the smaller pieces. If possible, you'd like to celebrate success along the way. You do need to be a cheerleader for this. You might feel a little bit corny sometimes, but make a mention of it in your team huddle. Make sure that you acknowledge the real, like the people that are real champions of this in your business. Make sure that they get highlighted and celebrated, and the wins that are happening are getting acknowledged. And the last thing I'm going to say on the change management piece is just dealing with resistance, right? Be ready for a few real foot draggers on this. I would recommend that people go and listen to this whole episode because Jeff explains it better than I do. But be ready to have some of those critical conversations. Hey, Steve, look, I got to say, I'm noticing a lot of resistance around this new thing that we're trying. Help me understand what's going on for you. Do you not like this? Is it feeling cumbersome? Get them talking and understand where the resistance is. Do your best to have those critical conversations, resell the vision, remove some of the barriers for him. It could just be that they don't understand what to do. They could be confused. In many cases, the resistance is for reasons that are much simpler and easier to deal with than you originally think. So practice some curiosity, ask a ton of questions. But at the end of the day, this is your business. This is your vivid vision for the future. If they are not on board and they're routinely not on board conversation after conversation, month after month, you might need to exit some people to do what needs to be done for the business. And that's, by the way, totally fine too. Right. So really quick mention on change management. Matt, I'm curious if you've had any experience with this whole getting people to adopt the stuff you make thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think early on as we were thinking about this and in my business, I felt like it was my job as the owner to do all the work in terms of coming up with the procedure and here's how we're going to do it. And I think I learned pretty early on, you know, I'm not the expert in any particular thing, especially not in the accounting and procedures and change orders and cash management. So I need to ask the people that are doing that to actually figure out the procedure. And so this was one that I learned early and kind of backed off on. So I'm still a part of that process, but I'm not the one initiating the process. I think that's a big part of this, is you as the owner of the company need to figure out how do we get procedures in place, but not mandate them from on high, right? If you're not the one in the field every day doing that job, you don't know the best way to do that job. We need those people to buy into, here's how we do it, and let's make this the procedure.
But you would have had to lead this in the first place. It's not like you can completely just hand. You can get systems oriented people. You can involve the team if you're following this pull framework. But is it not the case, Matt, that for you originally you were the one who really had to champion this and get the momentum built up in the first place?
For sure, for sure. I mean, as a quick example. I never really had a financial dashboard for my company until about, I don't know, 2014, 2015, something like that. And I had to hire an outside part-time CFO to help me do that and get it figured out. And at the time, I just had a bookkeeper that was giving us the data. And this was a guy that was really good at the job and understood what I needed on the dashboard and helped me understand the balance sheet and the metrics I needed to look at it on a monthly basis to understand, was I losing money or making money? You know, he helped me put an actual budget together for the first time for the following financial year. So for me, I had to kind of hire someone outside. But at the time, I also had my bookkeeper attend those meetings and say, you know, can we get this data on a monthly basis into this dashboard? So we can look at this together as a management team and really understand, where's our business going? Are we making money or not? That's something to think about too, is you might need some outside help for some of this process, and don't be afraid to spend the money to do that where it's appropriate.
I love it. Guys, we have 5 minutes left. We're going 5 minutes over. Do not go anywhere. I've got two ideas to share here at the end. And then I want to get you to this landing page. We can download all of the SOP building goodies that we have for you. And I would highly recommend that you do. So just sit tight here. Speed round, why SOPs fail. There's four things. Okay. One, completely abdicating ownership. If you dump this on people without any oversight, without any leadership, without being a champion for this initiative, I guarantee you this will be a total face plant. We see it happen all the time. There are some things you can fully delegate in your business. There are some things that you can't, and there are some things that you need to kind of be involved with, but also let the people work. And this is one of those things. You cannot abdicate ownership on this. The second thing is having the wrong tools for the job. If you're serious about this journey, I would check out Gemba Docs. I would check out Company Cam. I would check out Trainual. There's a whole bunch of really cool software out there that's pretty inexpensive. That's going to make the build out faster, easier to store, easier to find for your team. Another reason that they fail is if you're all push, no pull, you have to sell the mission. You have to get the team involved with the creation of them or else no one's going to follow them. And then lastly, they fail because they fail to evolve with your business. Your company changes every year. The clients you work with change every year. The stuff you build gets bigger, more expensive, more high performance. The SOPs must move in that direction too. I would say at a minimum, there's an annual update, but you can do it more often too. So I'm curious, guys, over the last hour, what has been your biggest takeaway from today? What was like the one nugget, the one idea, the one system? Like, what is the thing that you are absolutely going to go implement right away? Take a second, type it out in the chat box. Dave says, I bought a couple books. Yeah, it's a bit like a bit of a, sorry, we've really like, this has been an expensive web class. We picked up like 4 or 5 new reads. Hiring someone, Gemba, push versus pull, push versus pull. Okay, everyone got something good. As you're typing that out, I'm going to keep moving. Couple things here. This idea of the evolution of an entrepreneur is a very central one that we talk about a lot. Most of you are probably, if you're on this webinar, you're probably out of, or at least starting to step out of that grassroots level, like those first couple years where it's all hustle, it's very stressful, there's a lot of ideas, a lot of change, and you're moving towards, but perhaps have not yet arrived at what we call enterprise level, which is you're out of the day-to-day, financial controls are in place, SOPs are in place, a little less exciting. It's less of a roller coaster ride, but let's be honest, it's way more sustainable. And this growth zone, this is where Breakthrough Academy lives. This is like what we do. We help people get through the growth zone faster. Here's a quick little case study on Ian Price, who's a member of ours in Denver with Forest Street Builders. And this is a very typical story, right? Business was doing less than $1 million before they joined Breakthrough Academy. Now they're doing $3 million. Gross profit has gone from 14% to 43%. Net from 6 to 21. Hours worked from 80 down to 35. 35 to 40. These are the results that we care about. We want you to grow your business, make more money, and work less doing it. So that is like a very, very standard example in the Breakthrough Academy universe. We've got like quite a few questions piling up here that we need to get to. So if you ask one, we are going to get to them. Just give me 2 seconds to wrap here. Need to tell you about Breakthrough Academy really quickly. We systemize contracting businesses for growth. We are, in my opinion, I'm biased, but I think it's true. We are the best coaching and advising solution for contractors, for builders in the market. We have a really cool framework that we've built that we implement. We call it the Contractor Growth Method. It has 6 parts. We help you install financial controls so that you understand your numbers. We help you define roles so everyone on your team has a very, very clear expectation and the job description and goals that they're working towards. We help you build hiring systems so you can get the A players you need. We implement training and onboarding systems. That's where the SOPs kind of fit into this broader thing. We help you build out training and onboarding systems. We build and optimize sales and marketing programs so that you can take your amazing service, your amazing product to the market and grow your business that way. And then lastly, we help you with a really strong goal setting and execution framework. Just like vivid vision, right? You have a painted picture, you have a 5-year BHAG, you work that back to an annual goal, you work that back to quarterly milestones, and then you work with a coach who knows your business and knows your numbers and holds you accountable to executing. So we work with a very specific kind of business. If you're between $1 and $15 million a year, you want to grow more, you want to systemize, you want to develop as a leader, you want to work with high-performing peers and be held accountable, Breakthrough Academy is a really, really amazing program. I'd recommend you check out. So to do that, very simple. There's going to be a little thingy that comes up on screen here. Yeah, there it is. Get free resources and learn how BTA helps contractors. You press click here. It's going to take you to a landing page where you give us name, phone number, email. At the bottom of that landing page, it says, you can see on the screen, it's my preferred follow-up is, if you just want the templates, you just say, I just want the templates, no problem. If you're kind of curious about the program, you'd like to talk it out with us, we would love to hear from you. And what you can do is book a call with us. We call it a discovery call. We literally just listen to you talk about your business. What are you challenged by? What SOPs need to be in place? If you just want to have like a 30-minute vent sesh about some customer that's pissing you off, we can do that too. Like it's a, we call it a therapy session for business owners. So if you want to do that, you can book a call with BTA. We'd love to start a conversation with you, answer any questions you have about the program. And so you can do that on that landing page. Matt, can we do a couple questions?
Let's do it. I got time.
Okay. Where should we start? Here's a question from Jeffrey for you, Matt. What sort of management structure you recommend? Do larger, higher-end builders split the company into operations and business development? Does a partnership with multiple business owners work? What are the upsides and downsides of that structure?
Okay, so I'll try and make a shorter answer because there's a long-winded answer on this, but I started my business in 2005 as a partnership, and with the recession, we found there was not enough money for two of us to feed two families. So we ended that partnership. I was a solo entrepreneur for about a year until I had enough cash to hire a part-time superintendent, project manager, grew from there, was very kind of anti-partnership for a long time. And I had a older project manager who had run his own business for 20 years prior to working for me that later in the process, really just a few years ago, came to me and said, I'd really like to buy in as a partner. Why don't we do this as a 50-50? I'm really running the business already as your basically VP of construction. So we signed a 50-50 agreement. So I only own half of Reisinger Build. And we made a pretty smart, I feel like we have a pretty good buy-sell agreement together. He is decently older than me. And I do have a son or two that I think may take over the building company. So I had that in mind as we signed that partnership agreement. I think partnerships can and do work, especially with people that have complementary skill sets. That's, I think, why marriages work too. You marry somebody who's complementary to you. And then I have a second business, which is my video company, the Build Show Network, that I'm the majority owner of, but I have some minor partners in that business. And now I forget the question I was answering, Benji, as I was talking.
The question is about, and there's another one that's very similar. So maybe we can kind of fold the two together. I think people are curious about like how you have structured Reisinger Build, how many PMs, how many people in what different roles, maybe what tools and systems you guys use, stuff like
that. So we're 17 people total. I basically have three people that manage that business. My business partner is really the CEO, for lack of a better term. And I'm the Ronald McDonald of that company. I come into the parties. I talk to some of the prospects. I don't have any day-to-day duties in that company. And I also take a smaller amount of the profit for that reason as well, typically. And then I have two other people that are pretty high level in my team. I have an executive PM, and I basically have a person who's a new, relatively newish hire. She's been with us about a year now. So those three people basically run the company on a day-to-day basis. And I meet with them once a week, and then we have a more longer meeting once a month. And so that business has been running and operating really, really well. We're not trying to get huge. We're not trying to be the biggest, baddest builder in Austin. And then I spend probably 80% plus of my time on my video company, which is thebuildshow.com. And that's really my passion project. I'm really passionate about changing the industry and elevating the way we build houses in America, because we don't build to a very high standard in general. So that's where I spend most of my time, and that's kind of how we operate between the two teams. In terms of software, we use a variety of some software, some estimating software that's not Bluebeam, but it's kind of similar to it, if you're familiar with that particular product. We're actually not using Builder Trend anymore. We moved to Adaptive, We're just started on Company Cam not too long ago. We're pretty excited about that. It's funny that you mentioned that on those slides. We're fairly new users and trying to figure out how we can implement that across all our jobs. We're doing on a test job right now to see what that would look like, but it's got a lot of really cool features too.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Across multiple jobs. We typically do about 5 jobs at a time, maybe 6. Most of our projects take 2 years to build. So we're not a huge company. I've got 5 project managers, 2 or 3 assistant project managers, 1 guy who does kind of nothing but service for us. And then I have a small construction team. I have 5 guys that work on our jobs. I think that's really critical to keeping the jobs moving forward. 1 really good carpenter, a couple guys that are there to run for things and keep jobs moving, sweep and clean. And we do a variety of construction too. We pour concrete pads and we do some small metal fab, some architectural metal. We do a little bit of everything, really with the idea that we'll keep our jobs moving forward. And we started another company recently in the last year or so that's a construction equipment rental company that's intended just to feed my construction business. I have a couple of buddies that we rent equipment to as well, mostly temporary HVAC equipment. And then my 5 guys will move that equipment around and drop it at job sites and get it set up and built to that particular job. So we're not a huge team. I think it's someone in the comments said something like, I thought you were a $30 million company. No, we're not huge. We don't do that many jobs. I kind of like this size. It's a good manageable size without a huge team.
That's great. It.
Cool. Question from Kuyo asks, can you speak to using AI tools to draft SOPs? I can have a go at that. Actually, first of all, I would say, Aaron, maybe we can post this. We did an episode called 10 AI tools your contracting business can actually use. And it's all about like construction specific AI tools. We'll post that.
The first and most obvious thing to say how AI can help you with SOPs is, so let me say this first. I actually don't think that you should go to ChatGPT and say, write me an SOP for whatever. Your business is unique. Your market is unique. As good as these large language models are, they don't know how your business works. So they don't have that training data. I wouldn't expect it to do that for you. But what is really useful is transcription tools. So I'm a big fan of typing takes a long time, talking does not. So get an app on your phone that can do transcription. Otter.ai is good. There are many others. If you type it into Google, you're going to have 20 options. Descript is a good one. Find whichever one you like best. And instead of writing or even slower handwriting, you just speak into your phone and it captures everything. And then you can edit it later and you're able to capture processes much faster that way. That would be my best advice. And then, by the way, once you've done that, if you want to then put it into GPT for formatting or to clean it up or make it more concise, then that works. Those would be the ones that I think help the most. Let's go to a question from Nikki. I think it's for you, Matt. What was the most pivotal SOP that you implemented in your business? What made the biggest difference?
For us, it had anything to do with cash and draw requests. Was what we really worked on first. And probably after that was contract. Making sure that those things are dialed on your business makes a huge difference in being able to get a good rest at night. So anything that has to do with accounting, you've got to get those standard operating procedures. And you need to be in the ability to have Amanda get hit by a bus tomorrow. Please, if you're listening, Amanda, I didn't mean that as a prophecy, but he needs to be able to walk away and someone can kick right back up and you not lose a beat. And if you have standard operating procedures in place that they're gone for 2 weeks and nothing's a problem in terms of them being gone, maybe it gets done a little slower, but it still gets done the same. That's going to make all the difference in your business. Going way back to what Benji said at the very beginning, what keeps you up at night and what stresses you the most? Fix those things first and make sure that those things are buttoned up and dialed in as much as possible. And for me, that was anything to do really with drug requests, money, and contract. And so those are the things that I invested in heavily in my time, in my team's time, to make sure we got those right.
There's a question here from Thomas. I think it's for me. How would you implement all of this when you sub out all of your work? That's a really great question. So the way that I would think about that is I would actually, and this is going to depend on the relationship that you have with your subs, but I wonder if you can almost make it a joint venture with them. So it's like your drywaller. Hey, I'd really like to like build some SOPs, learn a little bit more about your process. I want to like a half day here and a half day there, maybe two, like these 2 hour blocks over the next few months. I'd like to like watch how you do this and capture this. And guess what? You can have this process at the end. We're going to share this, but I want to understand how you do what you do and learn from it. We both get a benefit from it. And I think I'd approach it as kind of a joint venture project, see if they're open to it. They may not be, they may be too disorganized. It may not work given your relationship, but I bet you a lot of them would be down. They might go, cool, you're going to write an SOP for me. Awesome. I'm answering that question, assuming that what you're asking is like, how do I SOP things that are not directly in my control, as it is the case for a sub? I'd probably think about it that way. But then I would, like I said earlier, I would look at the core processes in my own business. If you're running more of like a project management style construction company where, you know, one man band, you do the sales and the business development and the estimating, but then all the actual work is subbed out. I would be looking at the stuff that is a core process. Estimating is a core process. Financial tracking is a core process. The way you do sales is a core process. Design. So I'd start with that stuff that I own, and then I'd try to make it a joint venture for the stuff that I don't own and my subs do.
Let me pop in with a quick comment on that too, Benji. I suspect there's some people who I mentioned in the comments, like I use the same subs year after year. And that's a benefit to me because when we get a standard operating procedure on jobs for subs, they know what to expect and they do that regularly. However, not everyone has that luxury, number one. And number two, our subs change, right? Like my electrician had a new guy in the job the other day and I was like, hey, I've never seen you in the job before. Who are you? Well, he doesn't know maybe what we normally do, that we usually put Leviton countdown timers or whatever it is that's the standard operating procedure. I think one thing that's critical is your superintendent or project managers, whoever's on the job every day as you as a GC, need to really on a basically daily basis review the expectations of the day with those subcontractors. So for me, even though I've worked with Jeff for 20 years on my HVAC systems, I still go, hey, Jeff, where are you going to drill those holes for the line sets, and how are you going to drill them and how many holes are you going to drill? It's important that even though Jeff's done it 100 times, that we review that ahead of time, because once you drill it, then it's a whole lot of work to fix it if it's wrong. So that's just a random example, but the same is true whether it's a drywall crew, whether it's a paint crew, whatever. Hey guys, I'm excited to work with you today. Let's review a couple things that are standard procedures on Reisinger jobs. We clean up at the end of the day. Our job rules over there. No one smokes in the house. If you need to smoke, you smoke at your truck, in your truck, on the street, and you put the butts in your ashtray in your truck. Whatever it is, you go through those things. And a lot of times you have to do that on a daily basis, especially with someone who's not familiar with procedures on your jobs. And the other thing is, don't be afraid to call someone out when they're not following a standard operating procedure. With the one exception of, I have a inspector in the city where I work who smokes on my jobs, and he doesn't like me, and I've been real hesitant to tell him not to smoke on my jobs. So I here I am. I'm kind of a I'm talking.
There's one exception. There's one exception.
I was talking out of the both sides of my mouth, but I will tell him to stop smoking, but I want him to like be less harsh on me on my inspections first. I don't know. Hopefully I'll win him over one of these days.
Maybe just buy him a pack, Matt, and just see how that goes.
I bought it. I bought at the store today a giant no smoking sign that I'm going to put on the door into the house. And we haven't had to use those in years. All my job rules say no smoking. All my subcontractors, you know, if it was any one of my subs, my one sub would tell the other sub, hey, what are you doing, dude? You don't smoke on a Reisinger job. But something about that inspector with his little badge and his surly attitude and his ability to fail me all the time in my aspect. I'm like, who's got the power?
Tell him not to smoke. Let's do one more here and then we'll wrap. It's a great question from David. And I'm gonna read what he said, but then I want to expand on it because I think there's more here. So he's asking, who are the members of your staff that helped establish SOPs? That's a question for you, Matt. But then as you answer it, maybe you can talk more broadly about what types of people in general, not necessarily people that you hired in Reisinger Build, but what traits, the type of personality, what types of strengths are you looking for in, if David is, who asked this question, is looking to hire people who might be strong system implementers with him, what might he be looking for?
For me, the key is people, I really key in on when I hire people that are strong in critical and logical thinking. And actually do a pre-employment test through a company out of Pittsburgh called DDI. And it's about $100 to take this pre-employment test. And there's a 20-minute section of this personality test that there is a right answer. You know, most personality tests are like, would you rather plan a party or attend a party? Would you rather, you know, this or that? Well, that's great and all to know whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. But what I want to know is, do you have good critical and logical thinking skills? Because when you're on the job, there's not a scope of work for, you know, this Simpson part has never been installed before. And we got to figure out how to do it or, you know, whatever it is, right? Every custom home is a prototype. So I need people that are good critical and logical thinkers. And by the way, that skill set works really, really well for someone who is trying to implement standard scopes of work, right? Just like Paul Akers talks about, if we can simplify that process and make it really easy to follow, guess who's the best person to do that? Somebody who's a good critical thinker. Is this the best way to do it? Is this the right way to do it? Let me talk to the people involved. Let me think about this. Mm-hmm. That's kind of all three people that manage my business on a day-to-day business are really, really high in critical logical thinking.
Well, who are those people? Like what were their names and what were the positions that they take up in your business?
So basically my CEO, Tim Hill, who's basically the head chief builder, whatever you want to call him, he's extremely high on critical logical thinking, mechanical engineering degree, been building houses for 40 years, very, very good at critical and logical thinking. And then I have a role called an executive PM, which is basically like a VP of construction. He oversees estimating and all the project managers report to him. He's on job sites a lot, but he's also estimating a fair amount. And then I have a third manager who's basically my head of design that interfaces with architects, does a lot of the pre-construction work. And she, between those three people, basically that's how my entire home building company is managed. Someone reports to all three of those people on my team. And so that's a great team for me. And they're the ones that are mostly figuring out the procedures and documenting them and then making sure the team is on board with all that and following through.
I love it. Guys, I think we will leave it at that. We're way over time, but when we have Matt on, there's always lots of questions and people stick around. So I appreciate everyone doing that.
Yeah.
There's a link to that. Oh, this is a tangent, but the people are just posting a DDI and then there's also the Working Genius Test. So if you were interested in that, grab that in the chat. If you have not yet gone to this page, Aaron, can we launch this one more time before we wrap? Go to this landing page, get the free resources, check out this stuff. It's going to make implementing SOPs much faster and much easier. I hate working off of a blank, you know, Word document. Building stuff from scratch is never fun. So take our stuff. It's 80% done and you can tweak the last 20%. And if you want to book a call with Breakthrough Academy, there you can. Lastly, if you want to, like, if you like business education and you want to take your learning on the go, Contract Revolution is our podcast every Wednesday on every platform. We've had We've had Matt on, we've had Paul Akers on. And it's a really, really great show that just helps you level up your business. Totally free, no ads. I think it's really great content. You guys will enjoy it. I want to thank you guys for coming today. This has been a really fun web class, really active chat box with tons of questions. So I appreciate you guys coming. Keep your eyes on your inbox for future stuff that we do, because we do these pretty much every month with different guests. And Matt, I want to thank you for coming too, man. I really appreciate the time and can't wait to see you in Austin in a few months.
And I look forward to having you guys in Austin. Guys, thanks for joining us. Appreciate all your time. Really cool to hang out with you guys. Great chat too. That was really fun to chat with a few of you guys. But have a great Wednesday, everybody. And thanks for joining us. We'll see you on future BTA events.
Take care, guys.
All right, guys. Catch you later.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.